Alan Crane Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 2, delivered on January 16, 2019. The title of this lecture is Reading Investment Screens.
Tonight's analysis of stock screens. Now, when I say screens, what I'm talking about are the, on the internet, they are these websites that show you current information about prices of securities. And to begin that, I have to talk about, I'm going to use some terminology, and some of this I told you in the last lecture, some of it's new. And as time goes on, you will be able to identify parts of a stock screen more efficiently. For a class like this, right off the bat, I will use Yahoo Finance, but I caution you that this is an open screen and it has information that is, in some cases, not updated in a timely manner, and in other cases, it's just plain wrong. So keep that in mind, that if you're going to do this professionally or for a term paper, there are more professional resources, and we have them here for you. As long as you're a student here, you can go to some of the sites that would cost you a fortune to subscribe to. Morningstar, Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, and I'll expose you to those later in the course. But the benefit of a screen like the ones in Yahoo is that it's laid out in a very simple way to attract people who think they're geniuses in investments, but they really aren't. So we put a nice, they put a nice, pretty interface on it to attract you, but they write it at a level, show it at a level that's more introductory. So finance.yahoo.com is where we're going to go, and the first screen that you always get has some stupid videos running in advertisements, but right at the top, you will see that there are these numbers and these little spark charts. And I'll show you how to make spark charts for yourself. They're actually very nice in reports. But the first thing before anything else is I will ask you a very simple question. Sir, was this a good day or a bad day on the street?
Good day.
It was a good day. What color tells you that?
Green.
Green. Green means good. Red means bad. But bad is a relative measure. You see, when stock prices go up, people think that's good, and when stock prices go down, that means it's bad. But really, going down is every bit as good as going up. You see, because I can make a profit, I can make money either way. If the economy is doing great, I can make money off stock prices going up. If the economy is doing badly, I can make money off stock prices going down. And I'll show you how in this course. You can do it either way. You can make money no matter which way the market is swinging. Now, investors who think that times are good, they think stock prices are going to go up, they want them to go up. Those kinds of investors are called bulls. Okay? Now, let's make sure we understand that. Madam, I want you to say bull.
Bull.
No, say it. Bull.
Bull.
Yes, that's how it is. Okay? That means, and the a market that is going up, where investment sentiment is positive, is called a bullish market. The bulls are in charge. Okay? That means that on any given day, if you listen to the sound of the stock market, you hear moo, moo, moo. The other side, investors who hold that the market is going to go down, are called bears. Tell me that word.
Bear?
No, bears.
Bears.
Yeah, you got to get it out there. And you as a bear would be bearish on the market. And you make money. Your play is to bet that the market is going to go down. Whereas the bull down there is making her money off the market going up. So the bears and the bulls are in a constant battle against each other, buying and selling, pushing and tugging. Now, at some point, we've had a bullish market for a long time. The market has been going up since about 2012, as we began to pull out of the recession of 2008-2009. So we've had a long bullish market. Bulls have run the show. But the bulls are running out of steam. They no longer say, moo. They say, moo. And the bears are now beginning to take hold. We are in the first round of a bear market. So now you don't hear, moo. You hear, ugh. That's the sound of a bear. Okay? So, on any given day, you're going to see, even in a bearish market, bulls will have fun some days. Right now, you see that the bulls were in charge today. Does that mean that it's good times? No. This is a bear market. But in a bear market, you will have bulls win sometimes. As a matter of fact, a bear might pretend to be a bull. You, sir, when you're with your family, might say, ugh. But you might walk down the street saying, moo, moo, moo. Because you might be one of those bears who's smart enough to know that there are suckers. And we can create suckers rallies. And all the amateurs and those pretend geniuses and the day traders, oh, goody, stock prices are going up again. Because the bears are going to let the bulls push stock prices up. And then we will take their lunch. You remember Yogi Bear? Yogi Bear, smarter than the average bear. You remember Boo Boo? Gee, Yogi, is Mr. Ranger going to catch us? As he goes fetal and says, get away from me, you weird professor. You see, so just seeing, oh, it's green, so that means the good times are here again. Well, I would be very suspicious of that. You see, but there's more to it than that. I need to distinguish between an index and an exchange. Stocks trade, stocks and bonds, and other kinds of securities trade on exchanges for the most part. Now, some of those exchanges are physical. Some are just in cyberspace. For example, the New York Stock Exchange is a physical platform where buyers and sellers of securities come together to do their deals. That's the one you've probably seen if you've ever seen a stock trading platform with all the yelling and paper flying and all this kind of stuff, hands waving. That was probably the New York Stock Exchange. It's a platform. And many of the largest companies on earth that are public, their stocks, bonds, whatever, trade on the NYSE. Now, another physical platform is the American Stock Exchange, the AMEX. That actually, it looks on the surface to be just like the NYSE, but it's actually fundamentally different in terms of the trading method. In both of these cases and in other stock markets around the world that are physical, you will have at least some degree, and usually a great degree, of open cry. The open cry is when we're just yelling at each other And I've got, you are a manager at a brokerage house in Peoria. Now, you need to have a client comes in and or says, I would like 10 round lots of TGT at 65 or better. So what you do is call the people on the exchange who represent your interests. And their runner goes out to the floor and is trying to give hand signals, and those hand signals change from day to day, hour to hour, so that other traders don't know what I'm saying. To each other, the runners and the people on the sidelines are signaling each other. And you need 10,000 shares, so you do an open cry, 10,000, 65 or better, I need 10,000. Now, there might be a dealer on the floor, there might be someone on the floor, I got 6,064 is the best I can do. Okay, that's good. I'll take that. And then someone else might call another piece of the order, another. You fill the order. You're doing this in your mind, and this is happening in seconds. And you might have five or six orders right away at the same time you're trying to put together. This is all happening in your mind. You're keeping papers to make sure that everything, at the end of the day, you get everything taken care of. But you clear the orders in an open cry kind of fashion, oftentimes, not always. That would be something like in the United States, the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE, or the AMEX. On foreign exchanges, that what we call bourses overseas, the Nikkei would be the big one in Japan. China, does anyone know what the one in China is called? It's a Hang. And they're all over the world. There are stock exchanges. There are also in the United States regional exchanges like the Philadelphia Exchange and others like that. So they're all over the place. There are lots of these around. These, now, if a stock trades on the NYSE, it will have a trading symbol that is three letters or fewer. The other exchange has no physical platform whatsoever. It is purely an electronic bulletin board service. It's been around for many, many years. It's the one on which I did my work and my consulting work, getting companies listed on the NASDAQ, the National Association of Securities Dealers, and the NASD. The characteristic of NASDAQ stocks is that they have four-letter symbols, not three. NASDAQ is the place where small, risky, speculative companies would show up. Although there are some insanely large companies on the NASDAQ. Microsoft, MSFT, four letters. That's a NASDAQ stock. AMZN, that's an insanely large company, four letters. It trades on the NASDAQ. Now, the NASDAQ is an electronic network. And like I said, it's been around longer than the internet. There was an internet before there was an internet. The internet, as you know it, came into being in the early 1990s. But before that, we exchanged data over networks. The big one back for many, many years before the internet was called ARPANET. It was essentially a network of military, academic, and professional institutions that communicated with each other. The idea was that if there was ever a final nuclear war, which we all thought could happen since the 1950s, no nuke or exchange of nuclear weapons could completely obliterate this network, because it was all over the place. And so we traded information, we kept it in many different places among universities, military facilities. Trading through the ARPANET's network was also done on the electronic bulletin board service called the NASD. We would have a screen. So when I had my penny stock house, you might put in an order to sell 600 shares of some penny-ass company. You put it into me, and okay, I would post it on the board. I've got 600 shares to sell. and he's got a limit. He wants at least, say, $2 for the stock. So other broker-dealers in the NASDAQ network with their own NASDAQ screens, they would look at it, and you might say, well, I got someone who wants to buy 200 shares. Okay, that covers part of it. Well, I've got 100 on my, someone wants to buy 100. So we would put together, we would sort of piece together, just like they do now, except in an electronic format, all of these orders for buys and sells to clear the markets. Sometimes we could, sometimes we couldn't. I had orders that's for, especially sell orders, that would just sit for days and days and days because no one wanted to buy at the limit order that you would give it. And so the price would just start to drop until I finally got people interested in buying it. And then you'd bitch at me because I couldn't fill your order at your limit. And I'd say, well, you change your limit and I can get it. The price has fallen to a dollar, and now there's people who want to buy. And so you'd have to decide whether you wanted to, you know, just finish up or whatever, or just accept a lower limit. Okay, I'm sneaking in a lot of terminology. What I just showed you, talked to you about, what I just described, is your first experience with what's called a limit order, as opposed to an open order. You can put in an order to buy stock. And you can do a couple of things. You can say, just, I want to buy Target, TGT, one round lot of Target. Okay, now that would mean that you want to buy, a round lot is 100 shares. You would almost never order stock in anything or sell stock in anything but round lots. Don't ever buy an odd lot or try to sell an odd lot. You're going to pay an awful price, an extra premium on commission, trying to sell one share. It's always 100 or a multiple of 100. So you put in an order, buy one round lot of TGT. Now, what you said there was technically at market. By not telling me a limit, you just said buy it whatever the price is. But if you said buy TGT, one round lot TGT, at 65 or better, then you have given me a top price that you are willing for me to find. If I find it at 66, I can't fill your order. Okay, there was another thing that he did. He didn't give me a time frame, so that means it's a GTC order, a good till canceled. A GTC, good till canceled. Now, if you said good until Monday, January the 21st, at close, that is a limit, a time limit order. In other words, work on it. I want one round lot, TGT, 65 or better, on or before January 21 at close of market. That would be a different story. That would be, he's giving me a price limit, a ceiling on what he's willing to pay, and he wants me to get it done on or before a specific date. If I can't, then the order is done. It just closes out on the books. Okay? Now, every broker-dealer keeps a limit order book. It used to be physically a book, giant thing as it was, where we wrote in at each order what the order was for, as far as how many shares to buy, how many shares to sell. Then we would add up all of those for a day, and that would tell us, for all the brokers in the country for a given stock, and let's say that over a given day, Target, TGT, had a total on the limit order book of buys and sells of 2 million. You would see that on the next screen that I'm going to show you, the limit order book. It's a sum of all of the orders for a given day for buy and sell. Now, that volume number is on balance volume, OBV. What you're going to see in the next screen is an OBV, on balance volume. That is what is traded in the open markets. There are dark markets, and they are becoming quite heavy, where there are buys and sells that are not on the limit order books. They happen in the dark web. Some of the money, it's just institutions that don't want public knowledge of their buys and sells, family trusts, things like that. Some of it's very dirty money that's come from very bad places, Russian oligarchs, drug dealers, South America, slave traders out of the Transdniestra, whatever. That is not reported. We don't see that in the volume. We do know that when that stock eventually bubbles up into an open public trade, we see it. And sometimes what the hell was that? 2 million shares in one? Oh, that had been moving in the dark markets for a while. Okay, so know that when you see the volume, that's not the whole story anymore. Hasn't been for years, but now it's fully recognized that those markets are there, and they're actually quite active on any given day. As a piece of personal professional advice, stay away from that stuff, really. I mean, that's a place where this is no place for amateurs and beginners to start or even to, but I can guarantee you it's a place where beginners and amateurs end. Unless you want to die. Now, indexes are something else, but they could be the same as exchanges. An index is a theoretical portfolio of stocks. The Standard & Poor's 500, the S&P 500, is a theoretical portfolio of the 500 largest companies in the world. Each company in the portfolio, you take the market cap of that company, you add up all 500 of those market caps, that's the total weight of the portfolio. And then the weight of each stock is applied. That company's market cap divided by the total. And then you multiply that number by the stock price. You add up all those weighted prices, and that's the Standard & Poor's 500 index. These are 500 of the largest companies in the world, and these 500 companies represent about 70% of the total equity value of the world. So in other words, there are 500 companies that are almost three-fourths of the world's ownership value. Just there. Now, we have this theoretical portfolio, you'll see a lot about it, called the market portfolio, which would be if we took all of the companies in the world and found the weighted average of their values. So even though the Standard & Poor's 500 isn't the market portfolio, it's a darn good close to it, 70% of the world, the market portfolio. So sometimes we even say, we have this equation, and one of the parts of it is the expected return to the market portfolio. It's sometimes you'll even just use the S&P 500 as a proxy for it because it's real. And also, another thing, when I say that the S&P 500 portfolio is theoretical, I actually don't mean that. You would never have enough money to buy the S&P 500 portfolio. But there are now securities out there, like ETFs, they do buy it, and then they sell you shares of their company that did that. So you could actually own a portfolio of ETFs that was basically totally diversified. If you bought a single stock on its own, you're stupid. But if you bought an ETF that was a broad-based, well-diversified portfolio managed by professionals, you're doing professional investing. So don't impress me by telling me that you buy a stock or two every now and then. You're irresponsible. Good for you. If you win, great. If you lose, boo-hoo. If you're going to do responsible investing, you don't buy single stocks. You probably would buy something that was an index portfolio. Now, the S&P 500, I talked about that. The Dow 30 is another theoretical portfolio. It used to be called the Dow Industrial Average, the Dow Industrials, because the 30 companies were the 30 biggest industrial companies on Earth. Now, that is not the case. As the first world economies have had their largest companies be service entertainment types of companies, the old industrial companies have been kicked out. Is that blower, Mike? Really? I feel my pant legs flapping under that thing. The originators of the Tao would be turning over in their graves at what's been kicked out and what's in there now. For example, now in the Tao, Disney is there. Disney. So that stupid mouse, he controls part of the planet now. That's really troubling when you think about it, really. I mean, it's still the biggest monsters on Earth. Oligopolies, monopolies, what you learned about in your economics class. You might recognize some of the names. Some of the names in the Dow, the Standard & Poor's 500, you've never heard of. But they're still monster companies. Now, think about it this way. The Dow would represent the largest of the large monsters of the Earth. So the movement of that index would be different from the movement of the large, of the very big 500 companies. So we look for differences in their ups and downs to tell what to see what is being told to us about sentiment, about different sizes of companies. So if the Dow goes up a lot and the S&P goes up a little, then clearly the information that came through today was favorable to both types of companies, but it was more favorable to the very largest companies on Earth. Okay? Now, the NASDAQ is an index, but it is also that exchange. In other words, they just take all of the companies on the NASDAQ and do the weighted average. And so this one represents much more the movement of smaller cap, what we call small cap companies. Although remember that Microsoft and Amazon are in there, so they have kind of an outsized influence on it. But still, you'll notice today, for example, and I know these screens are a little difficult to see from up here, but you will notice that the Dow went up almost 0.6%. But the S&P went up 0.25%, and the NASDAQ went up only 0.15%. So there was good news for business today. But that good news was better news the larger the type of company that was in there. And also, I should point out, I don't really get too excited unless I've seen a third of a percent to a half a percent up or down. I mean, you can get all kinds of excited. Oh, my God, the stock prices went down 3%, 0.3%. That doesn't mean anything. And again, and something that I've brought up before, but I'll emphasize it now. Dollar amounts mean very little to us in finance. We want percentage changes. Because, for example, sir, if you bought a $10 stock and it goes up by $1, that's a 10% gain. But if you bought a $100 stock that went up by a dollar, that's only a 1% gain. So the absolute dollar amount is the same, but the meaning of it is completely different. So we want percentages so that we see everything in the same light. And I'll show you a formula, one of those most basic formulas of finance, and it applies to many other subjects as well. And I'll show you that in a little while. But as you can see, by the way, the Russell, there are a lot of other indexes. There are companies like Wiltshire that have a bunch of indexes, the Wiltshire 1000, Wiltshire 2. Then there's the Russell 2000. One thing I would caution you about is a lot of these sort of like secondary indices, they don't use weighted averages. They just add up the prices, divide by the number of stocks. And that means that they are not really doing a good picture of the relative impacts by size within the portfolio. And so be a little cautious. That's why you'll see me kind of ignore things like the Russell 2000, the Wiltshires, and there are companies, all kinds of companies that publish their own. Here's our portfolio. Here's its index, and here's its movements for the day. I usually just stick to the S&P 500, the Dow, and the NASDAQ because they give me a good enough picture of what's going on. Now we go to the numbers. We're going to look at a stock screen, and I'm going to walk you through. We'll start with one like TGT, Target, or if you're upper class, Target. Madam, don't look at that screen. Look at me. Yo. I try that all the time. People ignore me. Weirdo. Okay. My cats even ignore me unless I have a pork chop hanging around my neck. Okay. TGT, what exchange did it trade on? TGT.
The Dow?
There's no exchange called the Dow. We're going to ignore you, sir. You're saying, dumbass, and then I ask you, I don't know. It's an NYSE. NYSE. Three letters, NYSE. In other words, this would be a stock. You'd come out there as a runner to my area, and you'd say, five round lots, TGT. And I'd say, five round lots, TGT at market? No, I want it at 65 a share. Well, you can go bite me. I'm not going to sell it to you at 65 a share. And then you come along. Well, I've got a one round lot that I do at 65, and then you try to put together, and then the price starts going up. You said 65? I can do 65 now. And you have, say, one round lot left, so I do that one. You put it together with those, and you complete the order back to the office where the client put in the order. Okay? TGT went down. You see that? It's $67.85 on the settle. Now, you'll hear me use the words settle, close, interchangeably. That's the last price at which a trade occurred before the bell finished up. Now, in the after-hours market, you see that there is an after-hours market for these stocks. That after-hours market is essentially side activity of buyers and sellers. It could be coming from other parts of the world where the sun's still up and all that. The world that you are walking into, especially if you are in finance, is a 24-hour world. It clocks. There is life in half of the world at any given time. So if you want to have nice long nappies, sleep for 12 hours coming down from Molly and Addie, you're going to miss that world. This is about the time, and I hate to say this to you because I have, even at my age, I have a hard time with growing up, but this is a world where if you are a few minutes late, you're a few dollars short. You wake up at these kinds of people like this, wake up at 4:30 in the morning, and the first word in their mind is go. They wash themselves clean, they get their shit together, and then they get there to the floor. They have their computers running all the way to the office if necessary. They got at least one, probably two, three, or four mobile phones running, and they're talking on them at all times. That's that world. It's no place for lazy people. It's no place for people who can't handle short nights. Drinking is very heavy. There used to be a lot of drug use. There still is, from what I've heard, back in the day on the trading floors. And by the way, if you've noticed, I'm a pretty honest person. I don't care. Okay, back in the day, I would hear the nose blowers in the bathrooms before the opening bell. And then you'd hear the chop, chop, chop. And that was putting in the heroin, because the heroin would calm them down as a sedative so they didn't pop off the walls from the nose candy and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot quieter now. They're nicer, and I'm sure that if they ever hear me say that, they're going to come, the big dogs, they're going to kick my ass. They can. I'll name names. I will name names of the people I watched do that. So if you want to kick my ass, you can also kiss it. It opened this morning at 68.06. That was 15 cents below where it closed yesterday. Do you see it? Do you see that little drop right there at the beginning? That was at the close, and then at the opening, it went boom, down. There were some sell orders outweighing the buy orders at the opening. That's that overnight market. See it? That's what was happening. In the overnight market, there was more selling pressure. Now, the bid and the ask. The bid is what you are going to get for selling the stock. The ask is what you're going to get for buying the stock. Okay? You see that? So in other words, you, madam, want to sell me a round lot of TGT. I will pay you for a round lot $6,775. Now, before you leave, you have put in an order for a round lot, and I'm going to charge you, I'm going to say that'll be $6,794 plus commission. I'm going to charge you both a commission, too. And you're going to say, wait a minute there, fat boy. You just bought that stock. I just sold you my stock for $67.75 a share. And then you turn right around within a second and you sell it to him at $67.96. You animal, you ripoff artist, you creature from the Black Lagoon. That's the bid-ask spread. In this case, the bid-ask spread was 21 cents. The spreads can be all over the place. The higher the volume, the spread, the narrower the spread, at least to some extent. Now, there was 1,000 open at the bid. Well, that's actually 100,000 open at the bid, and there was also 900,000. No, no, no. 90,000 open at the ask at the end. Those would be on the limit order books, like what I did with you. It's just a number that tells you some the residual activity at any given time that hasn't been where there has not been a settlement of the order. Okay, so now the 52-week range, $60.15 to $90.39 over the past 52 weeks. Madam, are we at our 52-week low or 52-week high on TGT? Yes, look at the price right now. What was the price at the close? Look at that huge number up there, that big black number. 90. No, look at the big black number up at the top. 67.85.
Oh, my gosh.
No, seriously, remember I told you you won't see it? I know that. I just know that's going to happen. It's normal. Not that you're not abnormal, but in this case, it's very, very typical not to see what's right there in front of your eyes. I mean, it's like when I was doing this, some people helped me. I would just be staring, and I don't see it. It's blinking right in front of me, and they basically just boy slap the back of my head. Whap! Look, fat boy. Oh, I see it. Stars. No, number. Okay, so, yeah, it's pretty normal not to see these things. Okay, now let's try this again. The 52-week swing has been from down at $60.15 all the way up over the last year to $90.39. So are we near the 52-week low or near the 52-week high on TGT? You got nothing, have you? I know.
I'm all over the place.
No, I know. That's okay. That's okay. That's why in my combat battalion, we had this motto, more blood in training, less sweat in combat. If I make you bleed now, you'll be an animal as a trader later. Okay, sir, can you talk to me? Near the high or the low?
I think it's the low.
Yeah, it's near the low. See, because over the past 52 weeks, the stock price of Target has gone from as low as $60.15 to as high as $90.39. Right here. Okay, see this? This is my 52-week range right here. Okay? Now, I look at the price right now. So if I were to look at the 1 year, it has gone from a high as $90.39, and that happened last July, to as low as right here, $60.15. It is right now right here. So it is closer to its low than it is to its high over the past year. These numbers represent the trough, the lowest point and the highest point. And the end point here represents what has just occurred. In this case, Target is near its 52-week low. That is not surprising. We're in a bear market. So we're going to see stocks nearer to their low, 52-week lows, than their 52-week highs. It's just going to be the way it is right now because the markets are bear. It's a bear market right now. And even though we had an up day, that doesn't mean everything goes up on an up day. That doesn't even mean that the skies are sunny and clear and it's going to be wonderful from now on. Remember what I told you about suckers' rallies. If you're the kind of person that I hope you are, you're going to be a sucker, and I'm going to make stock prices go up for a few days. The bears are going to just stand back, and the bulls are going to say, moo, moo, moo. And then all of a sudden, once we get you suckers in there, we're just going to drop those prices through the floor, and we're going to take your lunch money. And all of that lunch money and your life savings and the savings for your kids' college educations and for your retirement, that will pay for about an extra martini and 5 extra ounces of ribeye steak at a great place just off the street, literally. So when you lose, you make us happy because we can get drunk faster. I do this to you because I want to scare you. I want to make sure that you understand that this is not an amateur world. And I have way too many people these days who brag about, well, I've been investing on Robinhood and I am so awesome. I mean, my butt shines. Yeah, everyone wins in a bull market. You're not a genius. It's when the market turns south that you show whether you're an actual pro or not. And you're responsible. Because we'll play you. It's just like casinos. I'll let you win at a casino a couple of times. And then once you get your confidence up there, you put a lot of money on the table, and that's when I make that table turn against you. I'll let you win 3, 4, 5 hands at poker. I don't ever play poker with me. I'll let you win 3, 4, 5 hands. I'll let you build up all that confidence, and then you put all of your money out there on the table, and then I take it on one round. Oh, what the hell? Oh, it's just Jack. Now, volume. You notice the volume today was below this is again OBV, unbalanced volume. The OBV for today was actually thin. This is something we've been seeing for quite a while. Last semester, I was pointing out that day after day, the volume, unbalanced volume for stock after stock after stock was below the 52-week moving average. That is a very good sign that the market players are very defensive. They'll do their little fights and all of that kind of stuff, but they won't have the, okay. Sir, can you be very aggressive? I want you to be very aggressive, okay, with me.
Okay,
so I'm going to start off with you animal. Come back at me.
You suck!
You, sir, are a Presbyterian.
You're a communist.
Well, there's that, but then again, the beard looks so damn good on me. Okay, ha. Huh. Fight me. Come on. No, swing your hands at me. That's what they're doing now. We're playing light. So you're the weirdest ass class. You see, the bulls and the bears are just having a little fight right now. These down here are the volume spikes. Do you see how the volume spikes happen when bears or bulls suddenly flex their muscles a little bit? Do you see how there was a volume spike right before the bears took control and slammed stock prices down there during the day? And then do you see how there was a volume spike here when the bulls grabbed a hold and started pushing stock prices up? Those are surges in trading as bulls or bears, sometimes bulls and bears, you'll see them actually swing. See these volume spikes right here? Look at how the price was swinging hard as these volume spikes started to happen. And notice something interesting. Towards the end of the day, trading began to increase on the stocks. So it looks like there was some kind of an upsurge in information towards the end of the day. And as you see in the overnight market, that was very mildly negative information. So the information is pouring 24/7. How do we know when to quit? You don't. You just keep going. If you need some sleep, whatever, get some sleep. I'll wake you up in an hour and we can get back to trading. Another thing, the next thing to look at, market cap. This is the total market value of the equity of the corporation. This is the total value of ownership of this corporation. You take the stock price times the number of shares of common stock outstanding. It's the market's assessment of the total value. Now I'm going to go over here, and I sneak these things in, and I'll introduce it formally later. SEC.gov is where I can actually get the filings of a company, see the financial statements, and I'm going to type in TGT, and I'm going to look at the last 10K where the last annual financial statements were shown. On the interactive data, financial statements, statement of financial position. The accountants say that the total value of the shareholders' position is $11,709,000,000. Going back to finance and TGT, the market says that the total value of the equity is $35.406 billion. So the accountants say that the company's ownership, the value, the total value of the ownership of the company is north of $35 billion. The accountants say that the total value of the ownership of the corporation is $11 billion. Who is right? And I already talked about this. I want you to make sure you know. Who is right? The accountants and the markets are saying two different things about the same value. So talk to me. Madam, who is right? Yes.
You're talking to me. You're talking to me.
Honestly, I can't tell if they're
here. I know. There's no one behind you except there might be a ghost. Did you know I run a paranormal ghost hunting club here at ISU? Yeah, I know, it is. It's really, no, it's an RSO. It's a registered student organization. I don't have any hunters right now because they all graduated or they got possessed by, you know, but that's a low-risk thing. But yeah, I actually run a ghost hunting club here. Yeah, look on Facebook, type Paranormal Hunters of ISU. They thought it would be funny to say paranormal. You know, get it, Professor C, get it? God, I'm in hell. But yeah, we got some good photographs, got a good photograph of a ghost. Okay, anyway, try to stay on track, okay? Where the hell was I? Oh, who's right? The markets that say the company's worth $35 billion or the accountants who say that it's worth less than $12 billion? They are wrong. Who are you going to buy your stock from? The accountants or the market? Okay. You are, remember, were you here? Did I give the example of the tour that you did on the Serengeti? Did I tell you? Okay, you're on the Serengeti. You're on this tour, and you've got your field guidebook to the Serengeti. All of a sudden, you see this cat, this ginormous wildcat coming at you. You look at your field guide, it says, this particular cat loves people. It is a great family pet. They are just excellent with children, and they will love you. You can just cuddle with them at all times. Now, you see that field guide, and then you see that cat. Now, who are you going to believe? That field guide or your lying eyes? You're going to believe your eyes. That cat is coming at you. The field guide is the accountants. That cat, old Frisky's breath, is the real deal. Frisky's breath is going to eat you. Yes, that's why they said it loves people. Barbecued, raw, you know, with mild lemon sauce. Who are you going to buy the stock from? You're not going to buy it from the accountants. You're going to buy it from the market. You see, the accountants, for all that I have respect for their work, they are irrelevant to the market. The market is what rules. Okay? Now, this goes back to that same thing. Well, the market is overvaluing this stock. No, it's not, because the word overvalue means nothing. Well, what are you going to do? Call the market? You've got that stock priced too high. Bring it down. Really? You're not going to do that. That whole thing, it's one of those myths. It's like the Thor, the thunder god, and all that. We tell it to the dumbasses. The reality is that the market decides for itself. It is an animal without passion, without bias. It doesn't give a rat's ass who's president, who's king, who's a genius, who's a failure. It just is there. It's a force of nature. So that market cap is the number. The beta. You remember that I told you that the beta of the entire market portfolio, the world portfolio, is by definition 1.00. In other words, the market has 100% of the volatility of the market. If a beta of a stock is below one, that means that if you put it into a well-diversified portfolio, it has less volatility than the market. Above one has more volatility than the market. Okay? So in this case, TGT, is it a defensive stock or an aggressive stock?
It's not a good one. It's less than one.
That doesn't mean it's not good. It's great. You're an old person. Do you want a giant swings in stock price?
No.
I want you to think about this. Here's my boat. That's 1.0. Here is a beta below 1.0. Very quiet. It doesn't swing hard. It doesn't swing as hard as the market. Now, here's a beta above one. Yeehaw! We're going to die! Tsunami, help! Beta is below one, so this is a quiet stock. This would be in a portfolio where you don't want higher risk. Now remember, high risk is how you expect high return. But you have, that's what I was talking about, appropriateness of investment. So, for example, you're a young man, and I'm forming with you a portfolio. We would probably at least talk about a portfolio that had a total weighted average beta of the components in it, somewhere maybe around 1.2, 1.4. But someday, did you know that you're going to die someday? Yeah. It will be sort of probably like mine. It'll hurt like hell. You'll bitch and you'll fuss and you'll finally shut up. Okay? In those last golden years, the last thing you want is yeehaw. You want stable income. You want low risk. You don't care if you get, you're not out there to win the world. Okay? You're not out there to become a billionaire when you're 80 years old. You just want enough for your Alpo and, you know, things like that. Okay, so in other words, this is the appropriateness of investment. You lean in, although interestingly enough, we now, young people these days, we found that they are, in general, much less risk-taking than they were a couple of generations ago. So it's just the times we live in. It's part, in fact, in marketing. We know that when we sell products to young people, we market them as wild and crazy and extreme and new and scary, but we also make sure that they know that everyone else wants those too, because we want to make sure that everyone in the younger community knows that their greatest fear is being different, being ostracized. And so we play you both ways. And in investments, we hear younger people say, well, I want to take risks, but we know very well that they probably don't want to take quite as much risk. Let me ask you this. Sir, what kind of a beta guy are you?
Above one.
Give me a number.
1.4.
That's very aggressive. This is a player, okay? Okay. Madam, what kind of a beta woman are you?
Very
market, very market. You?
I would say about one.
Sir?
A little above one, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
That's scary, you see. The first thing is to know yourself. Know your weaknesses, know your strengths. If you are defensive, you can win as much as the aggressive person. Matter of fact, the aggressive person is much less likely to know he is. Madam, what are you? A two? Wow. Whoa. That's a yeehaw thing. Okay. See, we don't know. And a lot of times what people, we know that polls and surveys are completely useless because we have to actually look at behavior to know what the truth is. People will say a lot of things that really aren't the case. And a lot of times, especially anymore, we will, younger people especially, they will say what they think we want them to hear, what we want them to say. So anyway, I'd have to look at your general behaviors to see just how risk-taking you are. Okay, now, the P-E ratio is how many dollars, price earnings. That's how many dollars investors are currently willing to pay to lay claim to each dollar that the company has made for them. Again, the PE ratio is how many dollars investors are willing to pay to lay claim to $1 of money the company has just made for them. In other words, in this case, the market is saying that every dollar that the company has made that belongs to the shareholders, this company is going to turn into $11.26 for shareholders. The higher the PE ratio, the riskier the stock. Beta is still your primary measure. However, PE ratio. Now, back in my time, a P.E. ratio above 20 was considered scary, above 15. But P.E. ratios have overall gone up over time. So now I look at like about 30, others say 50. Know this, though. P.E. ratios can be insanely high. There was a company on the Nikkei, which is a Japanese index, that had a price-earnings ratio of 200,000. In other words, investors thought that every dollar that company made for them, that belonged to them after the bills had been paid, was going to be turned by that company into $200,000 for them. Of course, that company essentially just turned into vapor. It was just so risky. It was insane. But, I mean, back in the crazy times of the 1990s, it was not unusual to see P.E. ratios 100, 500. Now, and like I said, they can disagree. Price-earnings ratio could be low and the beta could be high. Well, you always take the beta as the one that you take seriously. Now, the EPS is the earnings per share. This company makes $6, a little more than $6 per share that belong to the shareholders. The dividend on this stock is 256 cents. The 3.75 means that if you bought the stock today at about $68, that 256 cents would represent like a yield right there for you of 3.75%. Now I'm going to show you a formula here. It's not hard, but it's one of our important ones. The first part of it is it's a percent change in anything is the ending value over the beginning value minus one. Ending value minus beginning value over one. Over minus one. Okay, so now, do you see that there is some analyst who is claiming that Target is going to go to $80.13 in 1 year? It will be at $80.13 in 1 year. Now, is that analyst right? Oh, God, probably not. If I were really able to predict stock prices, sir, what's the first question you would ask me?
Why do you think you'll do that?
No. Be a cynical bastard. What would be the first question? If I told you I'm predicting, and I'm always right, that the stock price is going to go to $80.13 in exactly 1 year. What would you ask me? What would you ask me?
Where am I buying next?
No. Yeah.
Why are you here?
Very good. Exactly. You'd ask me, why the hell are you here teaching at this place? Why, if this guy is, whoever did this, is so good at predicting stock prices, why is he working for a company called Yahoo? Why are you here? When I was a young boy, I got, you know, that teenage depression. I got out on the roof on my second floor out of my bedroom, and I just cried out into the night, why am I here? This old guy down the street leans out his window and says, because you climbed out there, you moron. And his wife said, Harry, get back to bed. And that's when the dog started barking. That's when I became an existentialist. Now, be careful. You may have already heard the saying, on the internet, the person giving you information could be a cat. In fact, it is, because my cats, one of them in particular, answers finance questions and answers them wrong just to see how funny it is. His name is Phineas, and I'll show you a picture of him at another time. Okay? So, but let's say this guy is right. Now, the total return on a stock, the total return is going to be the capital gain yield plus the dividend yield. In other words, what percent you got on the rise in the stock price plus what percent you got on just getting a check in the mail for the dividend. So in this case, the capital gain yield, and here it is, the ending value, $80.13 over the beginning value, if you bought it today, $67.85, minus one. Now, the nice thing is that you see it gave me the dividend yield. I don't have to calculate it. I don't have to say 2.56 divided by 67.85. It's right there, 3.75%. So now, cranking that out on the calculator, and I'll pull up the TI-83. Okay, so if I pull that up and turn it on and clear it, I'm going to say $80, really? $80 and what? 13 cents divided by 67.85 minus 1. So the capital gain yield, this analyst is forecasting, is 18.10%. So I'll times that by 100 to turn into a percent. And then I'll add in the dividend yield, 3.75. So this analyst is forecasting a total return from a one-year investment on this stock of 21.85%. That's a whopper. That is certainly not consistent with the beta. That beta below one should be make so either this analyst knows something we don't, or this analyst is full of nonsense. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.